Welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, your host, and as always, I'm really glad you have decided to join us. Just 6 days left before we go to the polls in the November 22 midterm elections. They are so close now that many of us have already voted for one candidate, for one party, for one issue or another. And while we have been stressing the importance of paying attention to all of these races and all of the issues, there is one race that always gets more attention than others, whatever race is at the top of the ticket. And this year, that is the race for governor here in Michigan. Governor Gretchen Whitmer, a Democrat, is running for re-election. Her opponent, her main opponent, is Republican Tudor Dixon. Governor Whitmer is running on maintaining abortion access, expanding money for schools, increasing financial support for childcare and families, and yes, on fixing the roads, which she was not able to do without a tax increase that the Republican-led state legislature rejected in her first term in office. There is a lot more money for roads. Of course, she was able to work out a compromise to get that done, but we still don't have that big funding stream that we probably need to make our roads much better and to keep them in better shape. There are a number of things that Governor Whitmer also has not been able to accomplish because of the conservative majority in the state legislature. One of the questions for her reelection is, what will she do this time if she wins? What kind of policies will she be able to pass, especially if one or both of the chambers in the state legislature stay under Republican majority? I'm very pleased to welcome Governor Gretchen Whitmer here now to talk about all of this just 6 days before the election. Governor Whitmer, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Good morning, Stephen. It's good to be with you.
Yeah. So I want to start here. I stopped at the gas station this morning on my way to do the show, and the number on the pump when I was done was $100. That's a lot more than it was a year ago, of course. And it's not just gas. I mean, when I go to the grocery store, when I buy anything these days, it's just a lot more than it was. This is the issue that nationally, at least, seems to be framing the midterm elections. It's motivating a lot of voters. It's making them think really hard about their decisions. Where I want to start with you is, what can you as governor do about inflation, since it's the thing that is on everyone's mind? What are you telling voters about reelecting you and what that would mean for their pocketbooks?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, inflation is hurting people all around the world. It's a global problem that we're all confronting. And while a governor can't unilaterally fix global inflation, what we can do is take actions to keep money in your pocket and help you make more money. And that's what has centered a lot of the work that we've done, whether it's bringing down the cost of daycare or the cost of getting skills so you can get into that better paying job, putting our fiscal house in order at the state level, meaning we've paid down a lot of debt, but we've also been able to make record investments in things that'll make people's lives better, whether it's fixing the damn roads or it is keeping communities safe or it's investing in our kids' education. But we also have left some money on the books. And so I've been trying to get our Republican legislature to get some inflation relief checks out to people. We have the ability to do it. It would help mitigate some of the pinch that people are feeling. They've not taken action yet. But between that proposal, as well as a proposal to eliminate the retirement tax, to increase the earned income tax credit for people who are working full-time but just can't keep their head above water, these are ways that we can put money back in people's pockets right now, as well as a pause on the sales tax on gas. All those proposals are languishing in the legislature while they're home campaigning. It would be great if, when they do get back to work, we can get some of this done and help people.
So speaking of the legislature and what they've done, there are a lot of things on your agenda that you were not able to get done because the legislature is controlled by another party. On that list, you could put family leave, expanded childcare, raising the minimum wage, and, of course, funding the roads the way that you had proposed in your first campaign. So one of the logical questions, I think, is why things might be different in the second term. If voters go out next Tuesday and cast their votes for you and you are reelected, but the legislature stays in the hands of Republicans, are we facing another 4 years of this kind of frustration where the most significant parts of your agenda just can't be enacted? And I guess the flip side of that is then why not vote for a Republican for governor and take a chance with them getting their agenda enacted instead?
I think we've got very, very different views on what we can do. So, and not me and you, I'm talking about my challenger.
Sure.
I mean, you know, this is a moment where we have made record investments in public education. We have closed the gap between districts that festered there for decades. We actually are now funding our students at an equal rate, which is really important as we want to get our kids back on track. But we've built equity on top with record investments in at-risk and English language learners and students with special needs. This is how we really prepare our kids. My opponent, who's bankrolled by Betsy DeVos, wants to change that whole funding stream and take $500 million out of our public education system. That will return us to underinvestment and make it a lot less likely we ever hit that top 10 literacy rate, which is what we are focused on. We are making progress on the roads, but my opponent has undermined a lot of that work already. And as she has come out against economic development incentives, which has helped us secure the future of the auto industry and build out opportunity for good paying jobs for Michiganders. We can't afford to go backwards, Stephen, whether it's economic development or education funding or individual rights to make our own decisions about our bodies or the ability to participate in elections. There's a lot on the line in this election. And if I am returned for 4 more years, regardless of the makeup of the legislature, I will stay focused on solving problems. I'll work with anyone who's serious about solving problems. And I think we've shown we can get a lot done, even with a legislature that has been very difficult at times to work with.
So let's go further into that. What specifically would you say voters could expect in terms of relief from inflation, in terms of the roads? What can you get done in a second four-year term?
Well, we've already rebuilt 13,000 lane miles and 900 bridges, and I know your listening audience sees the work being done every single day as they drive to work or they drive in their communities. We're moving a lot of dirt. We're rebuilding roads. They know that, you know, our kids now have some resources so that we can drop class size and give them before and after school programming. What I'd like to do is have individualized tutoring available for every student so we can really be focused on the individual student's needs. We have the resources to do it for the first time in decades. I think that this is an important investment that we could make to get our kids back on track. And I'm grateful that there have been so many teachers and stakeholders and, frankly, Republicans from the west side of the state who have embraced this plan as well. And I think this is going to be a centerpiece of the work that needs to be done for the next 4 years.
So one of the other things that you have been working on is, of course, bringing corporations to the state, trying to create jobs and economic activity here with incentives. And there are a lot of people who are pretty critical of that, calling it kind of giveaways, giving money to these corporations that we don't get back commensurate investment in the people here and in infrastructure, in jobs and opportunity. Make the case for that approach to economic growth, which is, you know, somewhat controversial sometimes. Why is it that we want to do it that way? And are there other ways that we might grow the economy that don't cost us so much?
Well, I think the knock on Michigan historically has been that we didn't have the same economic development tools. We moved too slowly, that Lansing was too dysfunctional. And I worked with the Republican legislature to sharpen our economic development tools. We got it done fast, so we've turned that narrative on its head. And that's precisely why GM decided to make their $7 billion investment building batteries here in Michigan. as we think about how the auto industry is evolving right now, where the batteries are made is where so much more of mobility is going to be centered. And that's why we've got to win this race right now. We know that Michigan is now competing and we are winning. And these are the kind of jobs you can raise a family on. They spur all sorts of economic development in communities. If we are at the front of building batteries and electric vehicles, we're going to be able to sustain a Michigan where Michiganders can thrive for generations. That's why it's so important that we're moving fast. You know, when we announced our next energy, building a gigafactory in Van Buren Township in Wayne County, it is a huge deal. These are long-range batteries. This is a new way of building batteries. If that work happens in Michigan, it secures so many other parts of our economy, and that's why it is important that we not unilaterally disarm. If we don't win this decade, we could be left behind for a generation, and these are the kind of jobs that, you know, really build prosperity and opportunity for people.
But again, the way we get those jobs is with these incentives. And a lot of people think that that's the wrong way to go about it. Can you make the case for that approach versus doing other things?
Yeah, absolutely. So we know that for that gigafactory that we just announced in Van Buren Township, we were competing with 12 other states. They're throwing all sorts of incentives at companies to try to lure them to make investments in their states. We won because we had a thoughtful plan to increase our workforce skills, to make Michigan a place where these businesses can thrive, and we came to the table. Now, we have a prohibition on offering cash to companies. We don't do that in Michigan. We're one of only two states, but it also hurts our ability at times to compete, as you see places like Mississippi throwing hundreds of millions of dollars at companies. We don't do that. But what we do is build out spite. We work with companies to ensure that they've got workforce needs are met. This announcement we made recently in Big Rapids is one that the local barber was thrilled about because it means Big Rapids is going to have good paying jobs and they anticipate they'll see their population grow. It'll be good from everyone from the barber to the superintendent who will have kids in their district to the families that'll benefit. I always pause when we say, okay, this is 2,112 jobs in Van Buren Township. It's not about that number. This is about really creating wealth and individual opportunity. And I think that's why it's important we compete. If we don't compete this way, these businesses will invest elsewhere and we won't have those great paying jobs. And I think that's what's so important here, to not lose sight of.
Yeah. Governor, I don't want to spend a lot of time going over the tit for tat, I guess, that has been going on since the last debate about what you said about school closures during COVID. But I think it points to a bigger question that I want you to talk some about. There are some suggestions that the steps you took, the aggressive steps you took to lock down the state during COVID could have been looser. They didn't have to be as aggressive as they were to save as many lives as they did. In other words, if we hadn't shut down businesses for as long, if we hadn't been as stringent with state orders, we would have suffered the same kind of loss that we did. I imagine that that's something you have to be thinking about all the time, is what that balance was and how you struck it. I want to give you a chance to talk about that and address whether you would have done anything different than what you ended up doing.
Well, I know, you know, none of us wants to relive COVID, but we can't forget in the early days of the virus, the metropolitan Detroit area was absolutely slammed with COVID patients.
Devastated, yes.
We were devastated the same time that New York was. We didn't have a federal government that was helping us. In fact, they were disseminating bad information, endangering people. I was listening to our experts, and the base of knowledge in epidemiology was on the last huge global pandemic, which was the 1918 flu. That flu killed children disproportionately. So when the experts were saying, we think we should get kids out of school, it was an effort to save lives. We knew that, like any disruption in learning, It would require additional resources and focus to get our kids back on track. But as a mom, I was thinking about parents who are sending their kids to school. And if that 1918 flu was anything similar to COVID, it would have been a huge loss of life of kids. And so that's why, you know, that's why we made the decisions we did. We moved quickly. Studies have shown we saved thousands of lives. But in metropolitan Detroit, I know we remember that the hospitals were full. There were refrigerated trucks outside of them because the morgues were full, too. It was devastating. Every one of us probably knows someone or more than one person who died from COVID. It was a scary time. And when lives were on the line, it was, these were tough decisions. None of them was easy. And I know it's been hard on a lot of people, but we saved thousands of lives. And I think that's really important to remember.
Would you have done anything different with regard to businesses or schools?
Of course. I mean, I think if I could go in a time machine with everything we've learned about the virus and the since those early days, I would have made Michigan the center of the world in terms of manufacturing masks. I would have been able to know that we could do some things and be a bit safer than what we were fearing at the time. But leadership is about not getting, you know, distracted in the middle of a crisis and putting lives at the center of your work. And I think we did that. But now that we know so much more about this virus, certainly if I could go back in time, I would, yeah. Yeah, I would do some things differently.
Yeah. Okay. Governor Gretchen Whitmer, I know you have to run, but I really do appreciate you giving us the time and talking to our listeners about your reelection campaign. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. I want to encourage everyone to make your plan to vote. This is a really important election.
Absolutely. Everybody does need to get out there and vote, or you can just do it at home now here in Michigan. That is possible for everyone. Okay, before we break, I want to note that we have extended several times an invitation to Governor Whitmer's Republican opponent, Tudor Dixon, to come onto the show and talk with our listeners about why she thinks she should be governor. She has not yet accepted that invitation. But tick-tock, we are running out of time. It would be great to have Tudor Dixon here to talk with our listeners as well. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to stay on the campaign trail, but head to Congress and to the 8th Congressional District, where Congressman Dan Kildee is running for his re-election to Congress. We'll continue to talk with him, and we'll talk with you on the phone. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today. We'll work you into the conversation. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.